Hi, I'm John Billingsley, and you are listening to Beyond Track Podcast.
What are some thoughts of yours towards the whole, like, is Star Trek getting too woke?
The idea that a show that exists to push the boundaries in terms of what is acceptable and what is it, and what it should be like just part of our human condition, which is, you know, everybody on the fucking ship, everybody on the fucking ship, as long as you're nice. To me, it's like you can't be too woke.
On a red alert.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to, like, Beyond Trek Podcast. After nearly a six-month hiatus, we are back in your ears. And if you're watching us on YouTube, back in your eyes. That was a weird thing to say for a first time back. You can tell how out of practice I am.
We're getting rusty at this point. We need to get back to this.
What brings us back together today, though? You can spill it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it. Okay. Well, we're going to review the information that's been released about Star Trek Prodigy, and we're going to talk about the new season 2 trailer for Picard.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited, even though, you know, my scathing review of Picard was scathing season 1, but time travel, I've got a soft spot for it. We'll see what happens. Hawkshark,
go ahead.
Honestly, before we dive into it, did you want to show off some goodies that you were going to share? We've been talking about it for a couple of days.
Yeah. First, I'll show off just because it's Pride, and I want to show my Pride. Got a new T-shirt, which is real nice.
It is the best Trek Pride shirt.
It is a cool Trek Pride shirt that has all of the weed chips and the rainbow as their color trails.
Yeah.
And I got my family members back home to go through a storage locker of old things of mine, and they sent me a box full of micro machines of old Star Trek chips that I had.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. Now, you said that you were missing a few. Which ones did you have to get?
So I know from back in the day, I've never gotten the Bajoran light sailing ship. It was just always missing. I'd never gotten it. I know that was the only one I was missing. Apologies for Tuvix's barking. He's at that age.
We're going to have to explain that to the fans. Tuvix, what?
He's a puppy. He's only 6 months old. He's existed while the pod has been on hiatus.
Right.
So. Well, anyways, I never got the Bajoran light sailing ship. But I know I never had that one. When this box came up to me, there were a few additional ships that were missing too. The Enterprise A, Voyager, the Voyager shuttle, and an Enterprise D shuttle. So then I did the weak thing and went to eBay and just bought all the ones I was missing. Now they're all in the mail. They're coming. You know, it's fine. I'm an adult. I can spend my money and finish a collection.
That's right. So cool, man. Yeah, I got a new thing as well for my cosplay stuff in Starfleeters, this custom Stein. It says Admiral Valigant on it. That's my OC for Starfleeters on TikTok. I'm pretty proud of it because it means I can look like I belong at a Ren Faire now, but, you know.
Listen, I always see somebody walking around in a Starfleet uniform at the Ren Faire with the argument of, like, we're observing the natural wildlife or something, right? Yeah. It's perfectly valid.
Yeah, I've walked up to other people wearing Starfleet uniforms in my Starfleet uniform and told them they're not in period-specific clothing. What's wrong with them?
Good. That's perfect.
So, let's talk about Star Trek Prodigy. We got a first look this week.
So we got to meet the crew, where they showed us the cast, the characters, and a little bit of background information about each of them. And they put this out on the Star Trek website, and it's been circulated around all the major Trek info repositories. We can probably put a link to it in the description below.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't read through it directly. So do we want to start from just the top and work our way down?
Yes, absolutely.
Sure. So our first character is Gwyn. And that's a guest pronunciation. It might be a bit different. We'll see. And it's being voiced by a British actor named Ella Purnell. And she is of the Vau en Akut species, which is wholly new to Star Trek. Don't know anything about them. And the character was raised on her father's bleak mining planet. I don't know if that means that the father owns the bleak mining planet or it's just a planet that her father lives on. But it's interesting hearing that there's like almost an ownership level on that planet, right? Like it's very much theirs, it seems like. And the character grew up wanting to explore the stars.
Yeah, this character looks rather interesting. They appear to be sort of blue with maybe hair-like tendrils coming off of their head that kind of look like either very thick braids or twists that are banded. Other than that, they kind of have human facial features, ears, eyes, nose, mouth, eyebrows all in the right place. The clothing here reminds me of like what Bucky was wearing in Falcon and Winter Soldier, that blue sort of vest getup. And there's some interesting like gilded filigree on her arm. Not sure if that's part of the clothing or a part of her skin. But it would be a cool tattoo.
Yeah, I was definitely wondering the same thing. I thought it might have been like some character design or something, some sort of like biomechanoid enhancement or something, but that's something to find out. I thought that she looked really cool. I think her nose looks kind of feline, which is really neat, and her braids, and I do think that they're hair, not tentacles, but if they're tentacles, then they're very Twi'lek, and I like that a lot. But
Yeah, she's got that enhanced philtrum right there, right over her lip, that gives that a hint of a cat-like appearance. Mm-hmm. And then these very wide almond-shaped eyes.
Yep. You next?
Next is Brett Gray as Dahl. I feel like this isn't the first Dahl in Star Trek, but I don't know why I'm thinking that. Brett Gray stars a 17-year-old Dahl who fancies himself a maverick and holds strong onto his unwavering hope even in the toughest of times. Now, Dahl definitely looks like a kid from a skate park back in the 90s. He's purple, and he's got these mottled lighter purple spots on his arms and on his head. He has a nice floof of white or silver, sort of either mohawk or just side-shaved hair poofed up there with a very long rat tail down the back. You know, wearing a tank top over a sort of sleeve raw t-shirt, bands wrapped around his arms. He's got elbow pads on. You can only really see him from the waist up, so can't really see much more than that. But this looks, he looks like a fun character.
Yeah, I agree entirely. He looks really interesting. To me, his outfit reminds me a lot of what Rey wears in Force Awakens. It's got like a very utilitarian, put together from scraps kind of feel to it,
yep.
Which is probably on purpose. Now, notably, he's the only one in the main characters that they don't tell us his race, so we don't know the details there. Maybe that's an intentional thing that they're withholding. Maybe that's just an oversight because they didn't think to give him a name or something. Or maybe it's some plot element that we'll find out later. Like, maybe he just doesn't want to tell people that he is of a certain race that we've heard of before.
Or maybe he doesn't even know.
True, maybe. So what I wanted to comment, though, is this character description that they've given for him. He's a maverick who holds strong onto unwavering hope even in the toughest of times, right? To me, that reminds me of a character from My Hero Academia, Mirio Togata, who is like the most optimistic, painfully positive person, even though he's willing to do things on his own and go against the grain, but to do the right thing. And if they're at all similar, I'm probably going to love Dahl.
That's great. I have not seen My Hero Academia, but I understand the sentiment very well.
So next up, we have Jenkum Pog, who's being voiced by Jason, and I apologize for mispronouncing this, but Metzukis, who is a Tellarite, who is 16 years old, loves a good argument, just like every other Tellarite we've basically ever met. He loves to play devil's advocate, so I can relate to him on that one. And he likes to have the argument just for the sake of hearing all sides. So, generally speaking, he's going to be a character that we're going to see butting heads with other people, I expect. As far as his character design, he actually reminds me a lot of characters from, like, Overwatch. Like, he's got, or from, Overwatch in particular is the one that his arm looks like. It looks like a robotic arm from one of the mechs there.
Yeah.
It's a really cool design. He looks a little bit different than the Tellarites we've seen in the past, though.
very much a reconception of the Tellarite aesthetic. Granted, it's not like Tellarites haven't had their reconceptions. You know, there was TNG, there was TOS, there was, I think, one episode of TNG where, like, Lol is showing who she wants to be, and maybe it was an Andorian, not a Tellarite. Yeah. But we didn't see Tellarites again until they had their very enhanced look on Enterprise.
Yeah, and then we saw them again in Discovery, and they look different again. So we keep seeing different versions thereof. That's fine.
But one thing is that this is a 16-year-old, so this might just be what a young Tellarite looks like. I was getting, like, steampunk Goron vibes, if you're familiar with Legend of Zelda. Just sort of that aesthetic there. But very cool. Interesting thing there. A Tellarite is an Alpha Quadrant species. What are they doing in the Delta Quadrant on this Delta Quadrant ship?
True. That's the one big element that we know about the storyline. It's a bunch of Delta Quadrant teenagers that find a Starfleet ship. That's basically the plot that we know. And why is he there? Did he fall through another trick of the caretaker kind of people?
It is going to be very interesting to see how they put all of this together.
Yeah, and the voice actor that they've chosen for this has been in a bunch of things, too, so he's probably been in something that you've enjoyed watching or listening to at some point, so he's probably going to be a great actor for this, too.
Oh, yeah,
so.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Invincible, and American Dad among the ones that I've liked the most.
Yeah, he's got quite a reputation, too, for these. Like, he is very into his characters when he plays them, so I'm looking forward to hearing him do it.
Yep. The next one is Angus Imrie as Zero. Angus Imrie stars as a member of another classic Star Trek race, Zero the Medusan. And we haven't seen a Medusan since Is There in Truth No Beauty, a TOS episode that aired over 50 years ago. They are an energy-based life form whose species was introduced in 1968. They are non-corporeal, genderless, and most of all, known to cause madness to any humanoid who would lay eyes on their natural form. Hence, Zero wears a containment suit to protect those around them. The British actor who plays him has most prominently appeared as Prince Edward in Netflix's The Crown.
Where he did a really good job with it, too. He was smarmy as necessary for the character. He played it off very well. He's not quite at the King Joffrey level of, like, you just want to strangle him, but he definitely comes off as the character he's meant to be. So I think he'll do very well. As far as the character design goes, it looks like it's a patched-together mech, or some sort of, like, cobbled together. It's not consistent. It's certainly not manufactured or mass-produced for this Medusan encounter suit. And I like that. It shows that he's not... or that Zero, this individual, is not just going along for the ride. They seem to be actively enhancing their body as they go, which is interesting. And the fact that this is a character that is going to be non-corporeal, genderless, is going to open up whole new kinds of storytelling, too. That's an approach that we haven't seen in Trek before.
Yeah, this is going to be pretty cool. You know, we have had Adira using they-them pronouns. But this is going to be a very different take on a species that is naturally used to being referred to in this manner. And I'm suspecting that because the Medusan is also a familiar species, that perhaps Zero and Jenkum Pog have a history.
Yeah, I mean, the Medusans were from the known space area. We're not sure if they're Alpha or Beta Quadrant, but at least they're from near Federation space. So that's very possible. The other interesting thing is that Medusans are known as for their ability to navigate through, like, empathic or telepathic means. So they're, like, great interstellar navigators. So we assume that that's probably going to be his role on the ship that they're on. And it might relate to how him and Jenkum Pog are actually in the Delta Quadrant to begin with.
This is a totally ridiculous segue based on what you just said there, but a Medusan could theoretically travel the mycelial network.
Maybe. I mean, energy does travel into it. I don't know if they're at all fungal, but...
But Book could, because he was empathic.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
If
they can communicate in that way, that would be very interesting. Who's next?
So the next character is Murph, which is a great name for a character. Love it. I'm sure that it's going to get used for the Star Trek GIF subreddit quite a bit. And he is voiced by D. Bradley Baker, an incredibly prolific voice actor who's been in a million things.
Oh, yeah.
So what we know about Murph is that he looks like a blue-green teal with like a purple head protoplasm that looks adorable with these big black bubble eyes. They looks adorable, right? Like, looks straight out of a fantasy novel, and I'm very excited to see what exactly his character is going to do. All we know from the description is that he is indestructible, he has curiously good timing, whatever that means, and he has an inscrutable appetite, or he has an insatiable appetite for ship parts. So he's going to be munching on warp nacelles, maybe, or like an extra plasma conduit or something, which will be interesting to see how they handle. What do you think?
I think he's going to munch on Zero.
That'd be a good relationship. So what's neat is with using D. Bradley Baker, he's done voice acting for The Last Airbender. He's done voice acting for Legend of Korra, for Halo, Gears of War, Steven Universe, Phineas and Ferb, Gravity Falls. He's been in everything. American Dad, Legends of the Hidden Temple, right? Like, the guy has been everywhere. But yeah, the place where you probably know him most is he has voiced the clone troopers for and Captain Rex in all of Star Wars The Clone Wars, The Bad Batch, and in Rebels. So he is going to be an actor that's making the transition from doing Star Wars work to Star Trek work, which is always delightful.
Save the best for last. By the way, speaking of Star Trek gifts, I did share this with Murph, and he said that it's about time. Get some recognition. For those of you listening, Murph's33, you can find him on Twitter with the same user. He's our prolific Star Trek giffer, Babylon 5 giffer. All over the place on Reddit. The next character in this lineup, Riley Alazraki, I hope I pronounced that right, plays Rock Talk. Rock Talk is a hulking Brakkar, and Brakkar were first introduced in the New Frontier comics by Peter David, who wrote that series. They're another possibly Alpha Quadrant species. An unusually bright 8-year-old girl who looks like a magma flow with bright blue eyes and a utility suspenders. While a bit shy, Rock doesn't hold back when it comes to her love of animals. The actress is only 10 years old. And, you know, she's got a pretty good voice career already, having been on Cartoon Network Summer Camp Island most recently.
I wonder if this will make Riley, the actress here, or the actor here, the youngest main character or main cast member in a Star Trek show. I can't think of anybody younger.
That's true. Will Wheaton was 14. Sirach Lofton was 14, 15. So I absolutely...
Aaron was a little bit older, so yeah.
I think that would
be a good one to put in like a feather in your cap, right? I'm the youngest main character in a Star Trek show, or actor for a Star Trek show.
See, and the audience is going, but what about Alexander? What about Naomi Wildman? What about Molly O'Brien? I'm like, well, main character is the distinction.
Yeah. So I want to bring up just the Brakkar aspect of this. So I love the Star Trek New Frontier novels, of which there's a Brakkar main character in them called Zach Kebron, right? And his character is very interesting. From a descriptive standpoint, just appearance-wise, he does look a little bit different and is described a little bit different than how Rock Talk looks in the picture that we've been provided. The difference is that he is much smoother. He looks like a smooth golem kind of character he's still made out of stone, but it's no longer just like jagged and rocky. And that may just be easily explained as, oh, he's older, whereas Rock Talk is only 8 years old.
Right.
So, or 6 years old. So it's totally conceivable. I'm just super stoked about the fact that they went into the archives of like existing beta canon stuff and were like, ooh, that one's cool. Let's use that one. And just pulled it out and are using it largely full and parcel. The only thing that I'm really curious about is this suspender utility belt that is on Rock Talk the same as the gravity control belt that Zach Kebron used to have to use because he couldn't handle Earth standard gravity? So I'm wondering if that's going to be an overlap there as well.
Yeah.
Overall, I love the fact that they dug into the archives for it. Like, that's probably my most exciting bit out of the whole thing.
Yeah, and the Brakkar were introduced in 1993. So it's been almost 30 years for them. And it does say that as Qibron aged, his rockiness smoothed out as part of that. So I think you've definitely onto something where Rock Talk might be just really jagged around the edges because she's 10 or 8.
Yeah, definitely young is the point, I guess.
Yeah, Rock Talk, an unusually bright 8-year-old girl.
8-year-old girl, yeah. Yeah, so I'm really excited about just hearing more about where these characters all come from, because so in the beta canon information for the Brakkarians, or the Brakkar, they were Federation members. They were part of the Federation and had been for quite some time, so they're also an Alpha or Beta Quadrant race. So that's also going to be something we may need to wonder about, like, or is this a new interpretation of the Brakkar where they are in the Delta Quadrant or whatever else? Anything of which I'm perfectly fine with. I don't oppose them changing it. Just the fact that they brought it in at all is still impressive. I would love to know how the lawyers handled that suggestion when the showrunners for the show were like, you want to do this thing that was in a comic book from 20 years ago, and then these books too from 15 years ago? We want to do it. And the lawyers are probably just pulling their hair out. Like, do you know how much extra work that is? Kind of thing. So, super excited for that.
Peter David's going to be like, well, that's my Residuals, royalty check.
Yeah. Interesting thing. So the whole concept behind this entire show, Prodigy, on Nickelodeon, it's like a kids' adventure in outer space, etc., with children, is something that Peter David was involved in once before. So him and Bill Mumy actually were showrunners and executive producers for a show called Space Cases, which involved a crew of young kids on the Krista, named after Krista McAuliffe, the astronaut, launched into outer space, trying to get their way home, and it had a lot of Star Trek vibes to it, and it also has a whole lot of Prodigy vibes to it, too. So, I don't know. I don't think Peter David's going to be all that miffed about his idea for Brakkars being used in a show that's very much like his Space Cases show, as long as they give him the money. So, I think that he might have been involved in this. We don't know what the production team is for the show. He might really be in there somewhere.
He very much could be. I mean, they absolutely would have had to talk to him about the Brakkar, as that is... I don't know how Star Trek does their book licensing, but there would have to have been some kind of discussion there. This is your OC. Can we use it? Right. And those kinds of things.
I know it's not simple, because Star Trek Online's developers and other video game developers have always whined about how complicated it is to use anything from any other games than their own and any books that exist, period. So I imagine that there's some challenge to it.
Yeah, and that could be as simple as, like, so the publishing company that publishes the Star Trek books licenses the, you know, the IP for that, but there's an ownership technicality in those contracts for sure.
For sure, yeah. Go ahead.
No,
the last thing I was going to bring up... We're doing this again. The last thing I was going to bring up was the fact that they did give us another picture of Kate Mulgrew delightfully up as Catherine Janeway, and she really does look great. They've chosen the hairstyle for Janeway that is going to require the least animation time possible. The severe pulled back bun, going to look great from any angle, and their animators are not going to struggle with it. Now, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, hey, do you want to talk about Catherine Janeway now?
So we are on the same page.
Yeah. An interesting thing there, it looks almost like a reinterpretation of the Voyager uniform, whereas the Voyager uniforms, you know, the upper part was red, and that sort of tapered off right at the shoulder. This goes much further down that shoulder, more like a shoulder pad. But it still has the gray tunic. It still has the Voyager era communicator badge.
I would just call this artistic license level. Like, I don't think it's really too much of a change. It seems just I don't think the Greybeards or the Trekbeards should complain about, oh, they're changing the Voyager uniforms or anything yet.
Do you want to reveal who this Catherine Janeway actually is?
No, I'm leaving that to you.
You're leaving it to me. All right, everybody, thanks for watching Beyond Trek Podcast. Well, no, I'm just kidding. Catherine Janeway is voicing, Kate Mulgrew is voicing a hologram of the USS Voyager captain, an emergency training hologram, who will be the sole Starfleet representation on the unfamiliar ship that the young aliens find while escaping prison in the Delta Quadrant. So it's not actually Captain Janeway, but it's an emergency training hologram. This wouldn't be the first time that we have had a hologram of a Voyager crew member left behind somehow, if you recall the Voyager episode where the backup of the Doctor was discovered on a planet about, 700 years later with the Kyrian War and all that. I don't remember the name of that episode.
It's such a good episode, too.
Yeah, it really is a good episode.
It's called Living Witness.
Yeah. Right. Thank you for looking that up. And there are some stills below these reveals. We've got the first one, if I might. Dahl is gazing out into space from aboard a starship, and it sort of has that Discovery feel where the view screen is the entire front end of the bridge. If that's what we are seeing here. And it's, of course, beautiful. The rendering and the animatics are going to be top-notch for this. Do you want to talk about the second one?
I do. So the second picture that they gave us, the second still, is of Rock Talk at work, wielding gear. So that's going to be interesting if we have our chief engineer coming, or the character that's probably going to field that role as Rock Talk. That's going to be fun to see. And the character is wearing these big, bulky goggles to protect her eyes, I assume. So that's going to be interesting, too.
Yeah, I'm going to be very impressed with this person. This looks like it's going to be the most prodigious engineer since O'Brien.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there was one more Janeway thing I wanted to mention, though, about her being a hologram.
Do it.
So there was a good interview where Kate Mulgrew was asked about this, and she was asked, so what's your involvement with this? How do you get to the kids? And she describes it as, the five kids are found this ship. They're on the ship. They're trying to get the shields up. They won't run. They can't turn on the engines. Somebody hits a button and suddenly, bloop. Hello, kids. I see you're a little stuck here. Can I help you out? And that's their introduction, essentially, to this hologram that's going to be their surrogate parent, essentially, and their teacher of Starfleet's ways, we presume, and probably going to get them out of quite a few jams.
Absolutely. It's going to be very interesting to see this interaction. The next image here is of Gwyn, just sort of looking ahead in an area that maybe kind of feels like maybe an industrial tunnel space with light coming out of one end. The light's shining on her face. We get a little bit more detail on her hair here. It does kind of look like tendrils. I don't want to say those are tentacles. I definitely feel like those are tendrils that are bound into these little groups.
They have ringlets around them too that look like they have some sort of writing on them too. Very cool look overall for the character.
Oh, around the neck?
No, the ringlets around the tendrils.
Oh. Well, I can't see that as clear from here, but yes. She definitely looks like I don't know, she kind of looks like somebody who might come from some kind of status, with the gilding on her arm and that kind of collar, which is very, indicative on our culture to,
Yeah, I can see regal, it. I mean, it certainly bearing. Takes inspiration from African cultures that use those neck stretchers as well, because okay. That looks like it's the same kind of thing that presses and compresses and lifts the neck too.
Could
very
be.
Cool look overall.
Could also just be an alien prison collar for all we know.
True. That is such a guess on our part. Okay. But yeah, I like the background. It almost looks like there are irises there, though. Like something that could open and close to allow sunlight, maybe. What it reminded me of was that scene in the last Avengers movie where they have to reforge or make the weapon right? And they have the iris that opens up to the sun that Thor's like holding open or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what that reminds me of. It might just be the lighting, but.
Yeah, that's when they were making Stormbreaker.
Yeah.
All right, do you want to do the last one?
Yeah, sure. And then the last one that we have is of Dahl listening intently through an air vent. And the presumption here is that he's probably doing it while in prison, probably still trying to escape. So it's probably very early on in the first episode or two.
Yeah, definitely.
Again, the coloration here is great. I still think he looks kind of Talaxian almost, but like a purple Talaxian, which we've never seen before.
Hmm.
But it's an interesting looking character for sure. And yeah, the rendering itself is beautiful.
You know, you may not be wrong, and that may be why they haven't disclosed his species yet. Very cool. So we still don't have an air date for Prodigy. All we know is it's later this year. We can be assured that there will definitely be new reveals in at San Diego Comic-Con, which is just over a month away.
Yeah, that makes sense as well, too, because they'll be able to drum up a lot of attention for the show, and a lot of the audience that's going to watch the show is going to be tuned into that, too, so that makes sense.
And if you are still interested in Star Trek Prodigy, it's going to debut on Paramount Plus sometime in late 2021 before airing on Nickelodeon. That's in the U.S. It will also be available on the CTV Sci-Fi channel in Canada. And as with Lower Decks, international availability has not yet been announced. So we hope...
I remember seeing that Lower Decks was finally available in the UK or something.
At the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of outcry when Lower Decks was on. And, I mean, in the internet community, you can't hold spoilers forever. So people who are tuned in are seeing these things, and they can't participate in first-hand viewing and those conversations if they want to remain spoiler-free.
Absolutely true. And if you're trying to remain spoiler-free, you probably shouldn't watch our podcast on it, because we're going to be spoiling every episode as they come. That's going to be our activities for once those episodes air.
But bookmark the podcast so that when you finally watch those episodes, you can follow along with us as we tear them down. I mean, appreciate them.
I am hyped and excited for all of the Star Trek media coming out. All right, so then, do you want to move on to the Picard trailer?
Absolutely. So today, we got a new little teaser trailer for Star Trek Picard, and it doesn't seem to be holding any kind of spoilers back. It opens right with Picard looking for Laris, can't find her, and then there's that echoing voice of the one and only John DeLancey telling Picard that, you know, basically he's back. And from there, we get this montage of, you know, what's called The Road Not Taken, where it shows Admiral Picard in a Picard-era Admiral's uniform. It's not the Admiral's uniform that we've come to know him in from 2386, which had the diagonal stripes down, but it is that red sleeve with a red top with the gold trim in it on a Starfleet premise. One thing I do note is that the Starfleet logo seems to have been retconned to reflect Discovery a bit more, which I'm so with, but you know, it's a little nitpick that I have.
I think the little shorts that they're showing where it's like everybody realizing that the world has been adjusted is really coolly done. So to explain what I'm saying here, I guess a bit better, the presumption that we're getting from Q in this is that he's showing us the Road Not Taken, but he's changing it not just for Picard, but for everyone, right? So there's a scene here that they show us Rios realizing that he's wearing a Starfleet badge again, right? And the La Sirena seats behind the headrest show a Starfleet badge again, right? Like, these are things that were not there in the first season. So these are wide-ranging changes and adjustments, ripple effect from Q's change.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how this all goes. Now, I spent a couple hours today reading through the comments to the trailer in Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitter, and I have some thoughts as to what people have been complaining about. Is there anything else you want to cover in the trailer itself first, though, before I go on that?
I think I wanted to point out, you know, that the very distinct things, yeah, Rios is, you know, wearing a very interesting badge. It's got an interesting symbol we haven't seen before. It looks like a sword of some kind, but the top of the delta also appears to be, like, sharpened in some way, like it could be used as a weapon of some kind. Most notably, Seven of Nine is featured without any Borg implants, but she does have what appears to be a ring or the tattoo of a ring on you know, the finger traditionally associated with marriage in Western culture. Some people get some new hairstyles, Elnor and Raffi. Very interesting Flags of the Federation motive here. Do you want to talk about the Flags of the Federation for a sec? Because there's here that's really, really, or two here that are really, really cool.
So I love the fact that we see a Ferengi, a Bajoran, a Vulcan, Earth, Starfleet Academy itself, right? And a Klingon flag on the far left, right? There's one that I can't identify, but the writing on it looks very familiar, and I want to try and dig into it. I just haven't had a chance to on it.
You're talking about the teal one?
Yeah, the teal one. Do you know what that one is?
That's Tellarite.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So yeah, it's a great representation of various races, including some which we didn't know had joined.
Perhaps, yeah. And it would be very interesting to deal with the Klingons that had joined the Federation by the 25th century. Or maybe this is just a part of that alternate history, because this is Picard wearing that alternate uniform as an admiral, not having retired. Maybe, you know, the salvation of Romulus went through. Maybe the Hobus Star didn't explode at all and he never left. That would be an interesting thing to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it all depends on how Q decides to mess with Picard. This is not the first time he's done this. He did this to him with the heart attack, with the heart replacement, with the Nausicaans, that one episode where he had to relive his entire life, and he realizes that had he not lost his heart to that bar fight with a Nausicaan, he would never have been captain, hypothetically, right? So this is not the first time Q has done this. He does it in the last episode of TNG as a whole, All Good Things, where he changes and resets and rewrites things left, right, and center. This is all right up Q's alley. This is exactly what it feels like. And I loved the fact that Q even comments on the age of Picard at the very beginning of the trailer too, like, oh, you're older than I expected, kind of thing. Very, very well handled too. I think John DeLancey is going to be a delight to see.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a lot of outcry about it, because John DeLancey has a you know, some controversy in the fandom, as you know, Q was too much of an asshole versus, you know, bringing him back. But obviously the show is betting that diehard fans are going to appreciate this appearance.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting thing to see back and forth, to see, like, the complaints about the actor versus the works that the actor has made. So we'll see how that all goes. Yeah. Now, the thing I really wanted to touch on about the response that I've heard that I think is incredibly tone wrong or tone deaf for this whole thing is fans complaining about, like, oh, another alternate universe story. Oh, another plotline that's going to reset at the end. Oh, another mirror event, mirror universe kind of thing. Listen, guys, it's a Q story. Almost everything we do with Q involves some kind of reset at the end, because he changed his mind and snaps his fingers again, right? Like, he turned somebody into a Targ. Oh, I changed my mind. They're back to not being a Targ, right? That's literally his shtick and his power, right? So if you're going to be happy that we get to see Q, and I think many people are, you should not have been surprised that this is going to be either fuckery with timelines or pocket universes or some other kind of manipulation that is right up Q's alley. That's the game he plays. Remember what Q said at the end of All Good Things. The trial's not over, right? The trial of humanity is ongoing. That's what this is. This whole time is in danger, time is at stake. That sounds just like what Q is going to do. That sounds exactly how Q would mess with Picard. What better way to stress out O John Luke or OJL than to stress him by telling him all of reality is at stake once again? It's so Q it hurts, and that's why I'm really excited for it.
Well, and Q's thing is all about lessons. It's all about lessons. He brought the, you know, he gave Riker the power to see if Riker could resist. He gave the Enterprise a preview of the Borg to see if they could, you know, ask for help in a moment of need. Robin Hood was all about teaching Picard that maybe he does need to humble down and admit that he loves someone. And, you know, Tapestry being the penultimate best, I think it's the best episode of Q, giving Picard the It's a Wonderful Life experience to find out who he would have been had he avoided one of the most shaping decisions of his life and career. So there's absolutely going to be, sure, things might be back to status quo, but the characters will have learned a lesson.
Yeah, and that's usually how it goes, and even in his appearances in Voyager, right? Like, when he had changed the timelines, or when his son changed the timelines, he usually undid the damage that they dealt to Voyager's crew, right? And every now and then he'd reward them, he'd send them forward a few hundred, maybe a few thousand light years as like a, oh, thanks again kind of thing. But for the most part, he wasn't truly on a whim changing all of civilization or all of time, right? So as much as we give Q well-do crap for messing with humanity, usually there's a lesson to be learned at the end of it, and his prime consort, as we've heard from Lower Decks, is Picard, so we're gonna see how exactly they interact here, and I am quite looking forward to the tete-a-tetes returning, because they always had some good verbal sparring.
What do you think Q's gonna do when he realizes Picard's a synth, or will they just gloss over that?
I mean, I don't know if Q would even care, right? Like, that seems so beneath his level of caring. Or maybe he'll just be like, oh, you're a synth now? Okay, now you're not a synth. Oh, now you're a synth again, kind of thing, right? Like, it's both of those seem perfectly within Q's character, either not caring about human things or just messing with it.
You know, like, given that this is about time travel and stuff like that, and we might be seeing alternate, you know, aspects of Picard, he might just be back in his normal flesh body again for the duration of that trial, whatever it may be.
I mean, think about that as a plot line, right? What if he puts Picard, what if this alternate road not taken is Picard back in his flesh body, where he never learned about his Arimotic syndrome that was coming. He's actually Admiral until his age that he's at now, and that's when the Arimotic syndrome starts kicking in while he's Admiral in charge of the Federation fleet, or Starfleet. That could be an interesting storyline, too. Like, how do you realize when you're trapped in a prison of your own body that you're starting to lose your faculties, right? That could be a way to mess with Picard. That could be terrifying.
It could be. I want to talk about the promotional poster. It's a series of highways crisscrossing in a way that, you know, forms the Starfleet Delta. But these aren't like 23rd, 24th, 25th century highways. These are today's streets. These are cars on these highways. There's, you know, big box car, and these are today's cars. So it definitely feels like they're coming back to the present day in the show to do something. And maybe whatever that decision is what influences the timeline change in the future.
Interesting guess. You're right. It's definitely the current day city of Los Angeles that they're doing that in front of. That's LA in the distance there, right? I don't know why they're choosing to do it with present day LA. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. Maybe they will do some real far back time travel. There's nothing of that in the trailer itself that suggests it, though.
Yeah. The most sci-fi thing about this password is there's actually water in that LA channel coming across under the Delta.
Oh, is that usually pretty dry?
It's usually really dry. Well, I also, you know, I talk about Picard season one that I'm like, but I'm still chomping at the bit to see what they do here. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to not be, even if I'm displeased. I'm going to be coming back just to see what they do.
Yeah, I'm with you. The first season of Picard was very hit or miss for me too. There were some episodes that were fantastic, some ideas that were great and just never fully explored. I actually really liked the ending surprise of the first season, how they didn't end up having the big shooting fight. They just kind of like talked and scared and scared them away and said. I thought that was a very Picardian ending. I liked that. I hated the fleets themselves. I thought that the copy-pasting of both fleets was terrible. They should have done fewer ships, but some creative designs or something. Anything would have been better than what they did. But, yeah, I think that they can do a lot better. But Star Trek shows have a history of not having great first seasons, except for Lower Decks. So I kind of can't hold that against Picard or Discovery, both of which I thought had pretty crappy first seasons.
And if you want to hear more about our take on the first seasons of Star Trek Picard, you'll have to check out previous episodes of Beyond Trek podcast. Star Trek Picard Season 2 isn't going to come out until 2022, so there's just, you know, the twos, it's a thing. But you can catch Star Trek Picard Season 1 on Paramount Plus right now, or you can order the Blu-ray pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, and when it does come out, assuming that, you know, the world still exists or civilization hasn't collapsed, the usual issues will be here to help review, and we'll give you all the details we can help with as they go.
Yep. Renzo, thanks for being with me today to go over these What Do We Know Nows for Prodigy and Picard.
Happy to, Jack. It's always nice to spend a nice weekday with you.
I do appreciate that as well. Yeah, no, it's nice getting the rust off the old gears and getting back into the show feel. Can the fans find you anywhere online?
I mean, if they really want to, they can find me on Twitter. I'm not super active as Hawkshark on Twitter, or they can hit me up on Reddit as Hawkshark on Reddit.
Easy, easy. And I'm Dag. You can find me on Twitter at Trek Nexus, and you can always engage the podcast on Twitter at Beyond Trek Pod. Thanks for being here, and we will catch you on the flip side.
We are Beyond Trek Podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.